And it's time for Dane Neal. And Dino's with you, right?
Right on, Roger.
Hey, guys.
How are you? Roger. We're scrambling here to push the right buttons and get some music because I think that the people enjoy the full 360 entertainment experience. So, Dane Neal here, 720 All-State Showcase Studio. So, all the things that you know and love about everything that we're going to be doing here as we try to keep that bar high for the Matt Bumala experience.
That's exactly right.
You know, if you had any of the cupcake, yeah, I can understand why you're scrambling. Seriously.
I got to tell you, Roger.
We haven't gotten to it yet, Roger, but we will in a minute.
Yeah.
As soon as they went to break, you know, I had to mention to the entire group here that there was the team photo of festive excess, right? Because you had gourmet cupcakes.
Right.
You had an absolutely empty bottle of Knob Creek, which is a whiskey for those people not in the know. And then you had a scattering of some of the highlights, some of the hits in the Girl Scout cookie universe.
That was first, and that went to the side when the cupcakes came.
Of course.
It's like they couldn't even match up. Nothing against Girl Scout cookies.
Nothing against them.
No, but those. Wait till you guys won't be able to finish the show. Trust me.
thanks for the positive encouragement.
Real quick, we're working 2 to 4:30 tonight.
Before we get too far into it, we want to make sure music works. Do we want to check one more time here? Okay, good.
Sure, there it is.
Now the show is starting.
The power of music. The power
of Huey Lewis.
Of love. So, Roger, what are your thoughts on the whole Girl Scout universe? And I don't think we're going to impact sales because they've had their massive drive, and it is a big thing that fuels that sash-laden entity, that engine, the massive force that is the Girl Scout world. But I have noticed, you know, obviously they're enthusiastically, I don't want to say pushing, but they're really, you know, encouraging people to get out there and enjoy the girl. I noticed that there's some product diversification. There was some Girl Scout cookie cereal, I think I saw some.
Ice cream.
I mean, because this is a natural, right? People love the Thin Mints and things. Sure. But I've noticed, I think the cookies are getting, either the boxes or the cookies are getting,
aside.
They're getting smaller. Well, they were pushed aside and there'll be some retribution. But have you noticed that they're a little smaller?
But you're in the food industry a lot and I'm sure you've noticed that too. I know I have because I'm the shopper in the family. But I've noticed packaging, amounts, everything getting smaller as the prices increase. And so I think it's kind of hit the Girl Scout cookie venture at the same time. And I did notice that. Now, I donated the cookies I ordered to the military. We were able to do that through the radio station up here.
Very
nice. I did notice that they had a gluten-free cookie this year, I believe. I believe there was a gluten-free one.
So staying on trend with those afflictions that are so popular.
You know, my daughter and her kids eat gluten-free by choice. I'm trying to do that for my health. I've been told by several doctors, given the way I enjoy eating pizzas 24/7. But I've given it up since January 1st. I'm down 19 pounds, even though the cupcake tonight put on about another 10.
Wow, congratulations. That's big.
Thank you. And it's tough the older you get. You know that. So we need this diversification from the Girl Scout cookies to help us get through whatever we need to get through. But here's the other thing. Didn't everyone, until they started diversifying into cereal and ice cream and everything, didn't everyone, like, have the Joneses for, like, 11 months out of the year?
For a Thin Mint? Seriously.
Ago. Unless the Samoas, those are pretty good.
Right. Unless you bought so many and then froze them. Which a lot of people did.
My stash is running low.
Well, I think what that opens the door for is either kind of a black market Girl Scout cookie situation where you'd have to say, like, in those off-season times, I've got a guy, right?
Yeah.
Or else maybe it opens it up for maybe the, you know, the infomercial late night thing. If you love Girl Scout cookies, you'll really love these.
You know, knockoff cookies.
The packages, like, the symbols turn backwards. The
green's a little off. Yeah, it's not quite right. But here's the other thing, too, is as you know that you've got a good marketing team, when you sit there and you say, hey, we'd like to make a little more money off of the cookies, and so we'd maybe make them smaller, so with the giant blob of dough, we can make more in order to sell. But then you kind of blend it in to kind of current events, and you say the cookies are smaller because we're trying to encourage portion control.
Exactly.
People are asking for, you know, a little bit more consideration size. You know, they don't want to indulge that much. And so you make, even though, of course, we know it's so they can make more cookies. You know, well,
and that's okay. Having being a father of a Girl Scout at the time, and having had to bring about six sports bags full of cookies to City Hall one day because, like the good father I am, I sold to everybody at City Hall on about four or five different floors, and I had to bring them down on the L.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, Roger, you know, and I think anybody who lives in the city knows that if you want to get that extra stop sign on your block or maybe that pothole filled, you need to show up with some cookies now.
You
and then.
Gotta have the cookies. I could just see someone from the neighborhood going, Alderman, hey, come here. And he opens the raincoat, right? And says, I got the Thin Mints and I got the Samoas. How many are you down for?
Not for nothing, but here's a couple boxes for you.
Roger speaks Girl Scout cookies, and he speaks Chicago. Thanks, Roger. All right, on the line with us, too, and we're going to get into a little bit of this. I didn't necessarily plan to, but when I saw them scattered about here, obviously many cookies were enjoyed, as they are in households all around the country, right? You know, not just Chicagoland. Roger
sent them everywhere.
To the troops overseas. We got Jill on the line. Jill, welcome to WGN.
Hi, I just wanted to say that the Girl Scouts don't really have control over the size of the cookies or the packaging.
Oh, they don't have a suggestion box? Maybe even for new flavors, because, and I get it, you know, it's that whole, if it's not broke, don't fix it, and we've got some real, you know, iconic, legendary cookies that people look forward to, but they had a s'more one this year.
Well, this is the 100th year anniversary of Girl Scouts selling cookies.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if in the Chicago area there's been the s'more cookies. Have you had those?
Yeah. We ordered one of my daughters is a brownie, which is kind of the minor leagues of Girl Scouts.
The offset of the
right. It's kind
Girl
of like
Scout?
the CBA of the Girl Scout League. She's in the brownie. She was in the I think the Daisies or the Bluebirds or something before
Daisies?
That.
Yeah,
Daisies. Yeah.
And then she got drafted into
the
A League. Right.
Right then, up the ladder she goes.
Yeah. So and yeah, there's a s'more version, and you know, of course, I think it really kind of ties in. I'm sure there's a market group. Think tank, right, that says, hey, you know, we're all about kind of camping and kind of getting out there in the community and s'mores.
Yes, it's a traditional Girl Scout treat, you know. But all of the programs that Girl Scouts do, they're funded by the cookies. So it's a really important fundraiser for the girls.
Get your dozens of cookies.
No, it is. And it's the one, and I got to say this, and I think a lot of our listeners all over the place would agree. It is one of the things that people, Roger brought it up, people kind of jones for, you know, or people look forward to. People really appreciate it. Whereas like I think the big tin of the popcorn or maybe the frozen pizza sales, people do it because they're obligated. But I don't know how excited they really are about it.
My troop, I'm a Girl Scout leader, and my troop ran a cookie booth last weekend, and those cookie booths will be going on for the next couple weeks, and so, you know, you could stack up, but I've never seen such excited girls to sell cookies before. So,
where do you set the cookie booths up at? Your local mall, or where are they? Just anywhere?
It just depends on businesses who will allow us to set up an area. We just bring a table and a bunch of cookies, and we sell them.
Ah. And Jill, before we let you go, before we go to break, if you want to give a shout out to the local chapter, you know,
which one are you?
The gals.
Are you affiliated
from Troop 42 or whatever it is, go ahead and do that. Or what community? I see it's 847, so you're somewhere in the suburbs?
Yep, so it's Des Plaines, and we're Service Unit 404.
All right.
Easy to remember.
All right. Thanks, Jill. I appreciate the insight on the cookies, and we're going to get out there and buy some and enjoy them. I know a lot of people will do that. Thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, 312-981-7200. If you've got a Girl Scout story, either your story selling them, right, maybe some of the excitement along with that, or and we've talked about the product diversification. Like, how do you go to that next level? You know, you get into, that's what you have, like, Shark Tank for, and this would be Cookie Tank.
Sure.
Where maybe we'll think of some great products that we think might be, you know, something that you could go ahead and kind of take the power of some of those Girl Scout flavors and kind of blend it into something. I love barbecue. I'm thinking maybe a trefoil barbecue rub might be good.
Absolutely. I was thinking more along the lines of maybe, you know, you have the, instead of buying individual boxes of each type of cookie, maybe you have like a multi, you get a couple
like a
different
sampler
ones.
Pack?
Right, a sampler pack in one of them.
Cookie of the Month Club?
Sure,
that's how you stretch it out.
I only want six or seven Thin Mints, and I want some of these other ones.
They do that with chocolate for Valentine's Day. It's that assorted box. Why don't we do
there
that with
go,
cookies?
There you go, assorted Girl Scout cookies.
One with kind of that weird nut in it, or maybe... some kind of like icky, right? Icky tasting cream. Good thing they have the map on the back, so you know which one to avoid.
For
it's
sure.
Kind of like that, like Operation Game Minefield. But here's the thing, and you know, this I think would really work. And Dino, you made me think of it, is maybe like a Cookie of the Month Club. Is you sell memberships, Girl Scout troops can do that, where they'll send you a little ration of Girl Scout cookies throughout the year.
Right.
So not enough so that you blow off the big, you know.
Right, but of course, then if you need a fix and you're jonesing for some cookies, in like 6 months from now, there's going to be nothing unless you freeze them. So
we're all kind of using these heroin addiction, these like crystal meth references. You need a fix.
I just need a couple.
And you're jonesing. Well, it gets like that with the Girl Scouts. 312-981-7200. That plus on the show, we've got Dino Tiberi to my right, Craig Collins in the booth. We're going to have a fun show today. I know that there's some fun, irreverent, informative, and entertaining stories in the works. We're going to talk a little sports, talk a little Cubs spring training. We're going to talk a little March Madness, and for the first time ever in history, the Northwestern Wildcats are part of that conversation.
Knocking on the door. They're in.
You hope.
No, there's no question. They're in.
Okay.
Yeah, after getting to the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament.
The Russians hacked into the process there, you know, the NCAA selection.
Of course, a lot of people would be disappointed on Sunday if for some reason they had them all in a room and they bypassed them. That wouldn't be right.
That would be terrible.
Yeah, but that happens to some teams, so we'll talk about that when we get into the
discussion. Talk a little food, wine, and movies. Blake Stubbs is going to be joining us as well to talk about the new King Kong movie. So, again, along with the cookies, everything that is old is also current, new, and desirable. We have a brand new King Kong. What do you think, Dino?
Well, what version are we on now? I've lost track.
Well,
there's
like
been
Batman.
So many of them. Yeah, you just keep throwing another
Ben
one
Affleck
out there.
Is King Kong this year. No, I'm just kidding. But it's a role you want. All right, 312-981-7200. It's Dane in for Matt Babella on 720 WGN. What instrument is this? 720 WGN.
It's a really good question.
Yeah.
What is that?
I mean, it's not a synthesizer. It's Danielle, 720 WGN here, Allstate Showcase Studio, in for Matt until 5 a.m. I do have the one and only, the physical embodiment channeling the spirit of Harry Carey as we get ready for another season, Dino Tiberi to my right. And I've got the premier producer in all of radio, and certainly within 75 feet of us here, we've got the one and only Craig Collins.
I like the last part of that explanation.
Well, I mean,
within the 75 foot
feet.
Range.
No, I mean
of this area.
I mean, in no matter where he goes, so anywhere he is, within
he
75
is.
Feet,
right? Like, is 75 like a, foot radius for you, Craig?
And right I'm here. Actually just really strategic about that. I stay away from all other producers. I leave a 75 foot radius.
There's an industry order of protection,
right.
Basically. No one is allowed.
You don't want to cross the streams, Craig. I mean, that's trouble.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Now Craig is also kind of he is curated some amazing stories for us, and as we take that, as we did in the last segment, kind of taking that journey through cookie based history, and we talked about the Girl Scouts and how they've been doing it for so long, and the cookies used to be as big as pizzas, and now they're kind of like the size of it's not a dime, right?
Well,
it's more like
a
50 cent piece,
right?
No, not even right.
A half
quarter?
Dollar,
yeah, somewhere in the
something
middle
like
there.
That.
And and one thing that we have, I think, in common in whatever culture, whatever place, you know, on this planet, whether it's food is the thing, one of those, I think, transcendent just elements of humanity. You got food, you got music, you've got art. You also have farts, right? And so,
nice segue right there.
Well, I don't mean it in a bad way because I
think food leads you to that, you know, depending on what it is.
Dino, this is part of the problem, and I think this is where we're gonna, you know, just kind of arm in arm, we are gonna kind of walk back in history and finally give the. I guess we'll just use the layman's term, the fart, the respect that it deserves, because in some cultures, and I'm sure Craig will look it up at some point. This is seen as a sign of reverence, a sign of respect, appreciation for maybe a meal that has made its way through.
Man,
that
was fantastic.
Through that entire.
All right.
Through that entire, was it really? And then you.
Yeah. And then you just.
That's how you prove it.
Yep.
Right. With the. So here in history, we've all been to museums before, and we've seen, you know, the mummies. You know, we've seen the Tutankhamun one. We've seen, you know, a lot of stuff at the Field Museum.
Sure.
Old animals that are stuffed, which is, when you think about it, it's a little disturbing. I mean, it's cool.
Look at all this stuff on this place.
When you have your kids with you, they're like, why are they all dead? And you're like, ah.
And you got to go through that explanation with them.
Yeah, but they're beautiful, aren't they? Right? Yep. So you go back in time, and I'm not sure if this is a traveling exhibit or if this is something that if you go to the information booth and you say,
I'd like to see the
fart jar, specifically of the 17th century Europe. If they're going to be like, okay, that is in the the West Gallery.
See, now, wait, there was a bunch of science behind this back in 17th century Europe. Apparently, they were farting into jars, patients of doctors, because it was a cure for the bubonic plague.
You know what it's called now, Craig? Fart effect.
It's a fart effect.
Doctors would tell their patients that if they farted into jars and then saved the flatulence, that somehow would help them with the bubonic plague.
Oh, good Lord.
And that's
well,
just
look,
pure
Dino,
science.
You're, if you throw you back in there with maybe a mild case of the plague, you would be...
Did they have a White Castle back then? I'm
sure
would that
would have
started
at it. Straws no matter what.
Would they use them as rat traps? I mean, seriously, set them around the old homestead?
Open up the containers.
Yeah. I don't know why you guys are asking so many questions about this.
No,
we're
curious. We want to know.
Yeah, this is the process because for those historians out there, specifically plague fans, they are, they know that this, I think it was like a third or two thirds of the population of Europe or the world was killed off by the plague. And so I think anybody who had any ideas, I'm sure there's a big long table somewhere, probably in a castle, that says, anybody got anything? Anybody?
I got something. Hang on a minute.
It's like, what about farts, right? So then they come up with this jar. And so they're collecting them so they can study them. Now, when you think about that, and you also think about the capacity of the laboratory at the time, there's just, what could they do with the fart other than maybe open the jar and be like,
okay, go away, plague.
That's a fart. So, I mean, would they, because they understood, no, I think, Dino, you're onto something, is that they understand that it's relatively unpleasant and that it would maybe be unpleasant to a deadly organism or virus as well.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk about that, 312-981-7200. We have proof, scientific proof, for you to get out there and see the jars, these vessels, right, that were there.
Of gas, yes.
Well, I don't know if there's gas anymore, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right at this. It's Dane and Format on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Dane Miel here in the Allstate Showcase studio until 5 a.m. today, taking an audio journey through history, and not the normal history, not George Washington, and certainly did have wooden teeth. That's always kind of funny to talk about, but not the whole chop down the cherry tree or the Constitution or any of those
kind
of
way past
important
that.
Issues. Right. We're going all the way back in medical history. And, Dino, I think you've been in when we've talked about medical techniques that may seem or have seemed passe, like from the past. Like, would you really do that? When we were corrected to see that there are, kind of supercharged medical leeches.
Yeah.
That they'll put on because the leeches just know what they're doing. I mean,
they go right to the heart of the problem.
Yeah. Their nature's, I don't know.
Cure all.
I wouldn't go that far, but their nature's custodian, right? Their nature's janitor. They'll
nature's
get in there.
Janitor.
So, and you can't blame it. I think it's one of the great things about the human spirit is that we are always looking for ways, even if you fail a lot of the times, looking for ways to solve problems. And back in 17th century Europe, one of the problems was death by bubonic plague. And so here it is. And the thought process, I think, is what may have given birth to the whole two wrongs don't make a right. But here's what they were thinking here. When a mysterious illness is busy killing a significant percentage of the world's population, medical knowledge is a bit of a stance, so weird things can happen. It's the 1600s. Some doctors recommend their patients fart in jars to help treat exposure to the bubonic plague. And Dino, I think, unless they're just like, well, maybe it was a practical joke. Like, hey, you really did that? No, that's not the case. Here's the logic. When something like this, the Great Plague of London that devastated the city between 1665 and 66, was believed to be miasma or a deadly
Excuse me?
It's a technical and medical term.
All right.
From the past. A deadly air vapor spread through breathing in the atmosphere. So they had no idea how it was spread. I can't remember. Was it fleas or something that actually spread? Or maybe it was, you caught it from somebody else. Yeah, I mean, after you actually got... I can't remember because it was back in
It was back in, right.
But they believed that it was a deadly air vapor spread through breathing in the atmosphere. Doctors felt, and I'm using the word, I'm not air quoting, but I'm using it very loosely for those in the medical profession as doctors. Like, what'd you have to do to be a doctor? See, you get a robe and a pointy hat with a star.
I'm a doctor.
And
here
a
I
half
am.
Moon on it. Who knows? Right. You get a wand.
Let's get a look at you here.
Right.
That'll be $50.
You care. You put a cold compress on. Boom. Hey, welcome. You're a doctor. They felt that if a patient could somehow dilute the polluted air with something equally potent, it might reduce the chances of contracting the illness. So they advised their patients they have something foul smelling at the ready. So just as you would have maybe, you know, some analgesic balm, or maybe as a kid, do you know, you'd have Bactine.
Oh, yeah.
At the ready. Here, you'd have something foul-smelling to counteract the bubonic plague. So you have something that was stinky and putrid on standby. Some homeowners retained a goat, so there was probably a big goat rental business, and let it stink up the place.
You know, goats really, when they let one go, it's big-time trouble.
Others took to the practice of farting into a jar and quickly sealing it, and then would rush to inhale the stench when they suspected they may have been exposed
to the deadly germ.
So here's a lot of these suppositions. So number one, you're carrying this jar with you that you've farted into.
Let me ask you a question. Was there a picture of what the jar looked like?
Well, it's a picture of what looks like an ordinary mason jar here that was provided by Craig Collins.
That's what I was going to ask. Was it like a tube or was it a mason jar?
Well, I think if you're a museum quality jar, and it, let's say, depending on your station in life, Dino. So for you, if I'm going back, you would have sort of a Cubs-themed fart jar, right?
Hey!
Right, and maybe there would be, if you were maybe a nobleman, maybe you have a jewel encrusted. You don't want it too heavy because you got to carry it around.
All right.
Because right? it's kind of like today's EpiPen. Right, you know,
right.
Something happens.
You need to reach in, and whatever you kept it in, you needed to have it at the ready whenever that came up.
But you weren't falling to, you know, the prey of high-priced pharmaceutical companies because, you know, this potential cure-all you could create yourself. But imagine, I mean, just anatomically where we are, like the, you know, the end where you would collect is far away from, you know, you'd have to hold the jar down there.
Yeah, there's a process involved, I have to believe.
Craig, is there any kind of is there any picture? You know, sometimes back in the past, granted, everyone had to sit for portraits, so it was like you could catch like a.
Well, they grab their iPhone and. hey, hold that jar still, will ya?
You got a guy chiseling.
Turn this way.
Is it a two-man effort?
It's like chiseling out candids. You know,
that one didn't work. Let's try this other technique.
Yeah. So I'm imagining. So I guess based on what it is that they did and with what, so they would catch the gas
right
in the jar. Then they would quick put the top on.
As quickly as they could, because it's not a great position.
That's what I'm saying, right? Just, you know, unless you had, like, let's say you were a nobleman, you might have your squire, or maybe you had a designated guy that was like,
I say, squire, would you come back here and assist
me? Someone bring me the fart jar, lad.
Hurry up. I can't hold it forever. Claude, like, over here now. I think I feel something coming on. And then he would be there at the ready.
Oh, my God.
And then he would.
Yeah.
Because you want to get as much of it as you can. And just if you had to do it yourself, it probably wasn't that great. But for a lot of people who didn't have either a supportive family or maybe.
I'm not doing that.
No, I'm pretty sure you did because this was a big deal.
Otherwise, you're going to die.
Yeah. The doctors were saying this is how you survive the bubonic
plague. I mean,
plague.
Just think about it. Probably our ancestors did this because they survived the plague and we're here today because that portion made it. So
yeah,
your ancestors farted in a jar, most likely.
We could scoff at it all we want now, Craig. But.
Something went right somewhere for somebody.
Now, and I can tell there's some amount of skepticism for this medical practice. I do have a couple other examples of dated medical practices if you want to hear some other things that were done.
Well, the last thing on this, and so here's what they would do. So let's say you have this jar of this potential cure that you've, you know, you've collected in whatever way, right? And then when you felt that you were maybe in contact with the plague, again, now this is a lot of you got to just use your gut instinct here, right? So if you felt you came in contact with it, you would quickly as you could, you know, uncap the fart and breathe it in, and it would supposedly, yeah,
and then you're cured.
Take a deep breath in, and the plague is gone.
So, thank you, science.
So you would just hope that you had enough of these potential cures, right? To go along, I mean, if you're out and about.
I mean, you should stockpile. That's just obvious.
Oh, right. You want to mass produce whenever possible.
Right.
So gotta,
I imagine the squire guy, like, laden down with all these jars of.
You got the ones that rejects that didn't work. Oh, this, I don't know what happened with that one. You didn't eat the right thing to make that work right.
Right. Well, we've all heard the stories, you know, of beans or some foods that may lead to additional cures being expelled. And so maybe, or maybe somebody because we've all had friends.
Well, that's the case.
Who maybe are just, you know, more adept at eliminating like that. And so maybe those could be sort of like a brand name. We talked a little about the Girl Scouts diversifying. Maybe there's this like town guy who's like, just that's his job. Is he just makes these jars?
Well, I got a buddy of mine that would be right at the front of the line for that one.
Right. Because especially if you're a lady. None of us, really, Craig included. None of us are ladies, really. So,
You probably weren't asking them to do it then, unless you really needed.
Well,
maybe you needed
you
a different sample size. We got to try that too.
Get to the chopper. Yeah. Okay, so Craig, so what are some of these other things?
Well, so, you know, maybe that one's not the right ancient cure for the two of you, but maybe you'll feel a little bit better about another one. This is 2050 BC in ancient Mesopotamia. They couldn't do any sort of X-rays. Healers couldn't really look at your body to diagnose you. So instead, the way that they do it is they would examine a sacrificed sheep liver and be able to tell what's wrong with you based on said coordinated sacrificed sheep liver. This makes sense.
What?
You know, like I can't look into your body. So if we sacrifice a sheep and then I'll get the liver specifically,
okay,
I'll figure things out and you'll be okay.
Did you get this? Did like the, you know, whoever the patient was, did they get to spend any kind of quality time with this sheep?
Bonding with the sheep first.
Right, where it's just like, sheep, here's what's going on with me. And then the sheep's like, well, I'm picking up what you're dropping down and my liver's going to reflect my true feelings on this. So once you kill me. And look at my liver.
If you see the cirrhosis on mine, you know you're in trouble.
Right. I mean, okay.
Well, so it says at the time the liver was thought to be the source of human blood and hence the source of life itself. So sacrificing a sheep for some reason and then examining the liver, you were just seeing quality of life. It's just a very easy.
Cut it open and that's it, right out in front of you.
Did you at least maybe let the sheep in on one of those jars you may have with you?
Yeah, here, we're going to put you under. Here's some anesthetic. Take that.
I had an enchilada sheep here. What do you think? No, I'm just kidding.
If you want, I could just read a couple more of the titles of other treatments. There's dead mouse paste.
Oh, nice.
I had a nickel for every time.
You got to seal that up. Get the dead mouse paste out. That'll work.
Roger had mentioned jonesing for something.
Right. This was a practice in ancient Egypt. Apparently, they decided that this was a good way to cure tooth pain and toothaches.
With mouse paste?
Yeah, they would turn a deceased mouse into paste, and then you would consume that.
Wow.
Jeez. See, because no one had, like, who are these idea guys, right?
The think tank was a little short back then.
Our other treatments are working. I'm going to go off wall a little bit, and I'm going to recommend something else.
I got this toothache. I wish someone would. And then the guy says, like, hey, because I don't care where you were or what era of existence you may have been, like, a dead mouse is a pretty stinky, repulsive thing. You wouldn't be thinking, why can't it be something delicious, you know, like cupcake paste?
Well, and they were trying things, like you said. They're still trying to develop science and healing world. There is one that worked. Moldy bread is what eventually Louis Pasteur used to discover a lot of the treatments we have today. But back in the day, in ancient Egypt, they would use moldy bread as a disinfectant for all kinds of cuts and anything.
All right,
just go get us some moldy bread.
Rub that end in there. Take that end piece of the bread there and put it on there.
I'm more of a rye man myself. Wow.
But that is how penicillin exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's trial and error. Yeah. You know, so for every one of those fart jars that stopped the bubonic plague, there was a moldy piece of bread that really made a difference in this
mouse world. Paste. One way or another, it was getting cured.
312-981-7200. Ancient cures from the past, if you're aware of any that may have maybe some roots in some historical cures, or maybe you want to share it today, maybe medical professionals that are out there. I know that's a lot of people working third shift on that. There may be some kind of current day, you know,
some
stuff.
Remedies that might fix some
made
things
of mouse
that
paste
no one knows about.
The moldy bread, we got that for sure.
Moldy bread, yeah.
Plus, we're going to talk a little bit about some basketball, NCAA, Northwestern. We're going to talk some Cubs. We've got some movies coming up a little bit after 3 with Blake Stubbs, so stay tuned. We'll be back. It's staying in for Matt on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it is Dane here in for Matt until 5 a.m. In the Allstate Showcase studio right here on Michigan Avenue, a newly chilly Michigan Avenue. To my right, Dino Tiberi, and we are going to talk a little bit of sports a little bit later on. We might talk a little bit about, you know, I mean, if it just leaks in, you can't help yourself. Northwestern is going to be in, do you feel like it's possible to jinx them? Of course, Craig Collins in the booth, spinning the hits.
Yeah, I don't think there's any, I don't think there's any way they're out. I really don't. That's my opinion. I mean, their record speaks for itself. They've got, you know, they had a nice win today against Maryland in the Big Ten tournament. on basically Maryland's home court because the tournament's out east this year. It's not here in the Midwest, so which I found a little odd. But then again, I found out after that that next year it's going to be in Madison Square Garden. So they're moving them around because Rutgers is right there in New Jersey, and now since they're a part of the Big Ten, they're going to try to get that block of fans out there too, I guess.
Oh, Northwestern has a well-earned reputation for academic excellence and success, and that doesn't always lend itself to the best sports teams. Traditionally, it just isn't. You know, people have a different focus, and maybe you're not always as good as you could be. Perfect timing, though, for Northwestern because, you know, aren't they kind of getting into a new arena soon? And so this would be the time you'd want to be good.
They just had their last home game last week. Now they're going to do renovations. They're going to be playing at the Allstate Arena next year for all their home games until they can get you know, the arena redone. And so, you know, it's about time. I mean, it's a cozy gym over there. It's time to, you know, maybe upgrade and get some things in there that, you know, some of the other modern facilities have. And they're going to work on that, and they'll take the next year off, and they won't be playing there until 2019.
So I want to preface this question with Go Cats. I wanted to say that first and foremost.
How do you
do that? Wow. Yeah, we need the sound. If they are one and done in the tourney, it's their first year in the tourney, is that still a success, do you think? Is there a level of success that's more important?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think the fact that they've done something that no other Northwestern team's done in history, that's a success in itself. I mean, the number of wins they already have, the teams that they've defeated, the fact that they were in the upper half of the Big Ten, which hasn't happened very often at all in their history, you know, in and itself, but the fact that they're going to be in a tournament on a national stage now, you know, we're going to be able to see them next week, you know, after they get the announcement on Sunday, to watch them play in that you know, that type of space will be good.
I think too, and if they can get it's already been like this is, you know, historic success for them, even though it isn't necessarily like national success, but for, you know, for fans of the team, and certainly in the Chicagoland area, it's great to have a team that is doing that and have it be Northwestern. I think is really cool, and we can look back in the history books, obviously, to the fart jar, but we can also look back to the you know, DePaul when they had those great teams and they were playing at the Rosemont Horizon, which is really the, you know, the Allstate Arena. It gave an opportunity for a lot of people to come out because it was a bigger place and kind of suburbanly located. People were able to get out there and see them. So I think if Northwestern, you know, becomes one of those sort of darlings, maybe wins one, maybe two games, They could be just like, especially then playing next year, you know, not up on the lakefront, but also, you know, kind of in a place everybody drives by on a regular basis. They could get a huge fan base. I think a lot of people would love to go and see them.
Yeah, I think Chris Collins has done a great job at bringing in a lot of local talent, keeping it here, bringing in some out-of-state talent as well, and he's got a good mix of players that are coming in here, and he's done a great job of just keeping everybody focused they've had a, you know, it's been a great season for them to date, and whatever they get on top of this is just going to be the cherry on top of the sundae.
Is it the kind of thing that you think it'll be? And of course, you got that great kind of coaching legacy, you know, that they have there. But it isn't one of those lightning in a bottle things, you know, like you had with like Princeton, you know, was really good, but obviously still academically focused, and they just had a really good team, you know, for a couple and a great coach who ended up, you know, coming to Northwestern after that. But the, is this something that we'll just, you know, it's like Wisconsin. You and I talked about it off the air. Do you know, it's like Wisconsin is a traditional basketball power now. It wasn't always the case.
Not at all.
And now are we seeing where we're just going to have to redefine how we feel or talk about Northwestern when it comes to basketball?
Well, I think as long as they have some stability, if Chris Collins stays at that position, which I'm sure he will, at least for the short run, and, you know, he's done some things to get to build that program up. And, you know, right now, I mean, they're the only team that I can see, you know, in Illinois that's going to be in the tournament because, you know, Illinois had a bad loss to Rutgers in the tournament to begin with. So they basically eliminated themselves with that one. And none of the other, and Illinois State's on the bubble. So really, Northwestern's the only state chance at this point to get into the tournament. So, you know, they have it all to themselves right now. And, you know, I think going forward, it's only going to build on that because they're going to be able to tell recruits, yeah, listen, you know, we were in a tournament last year, and you know, we know they're trying to maybe, you know, the blueprints out there with Duke and with Stanford and some of the other high academic schools that have also had a success on, you know, not only in the basketball court, but also on the football field, you know, as far as Stanford's concerned, and then Duke in a smaller way. I just think that that's, you know, a great recruiting tool going forward, saying you could come here and, you know, get your education at a great school. And now, you know, we have the athletics to back that up as well.
Right. You think kids that are smart out there have a lot of choices on the academic side as far as universities to go to. You still want to win, and you got to have some of those pieces in place in order to provide that opportunity to win and further your athletic career as far as you can do it. And it all starts with winning. Sometimes, I mean, maybe all the time, the hardest part is getting it going in the first place and then kind of maintaining it and then getting that pipeline. It's tough with college sports. And then, I did want to mention, too, is a long time Matt Bubala fan. John has texted in. He has asked to be texted back. I cannot really do that. I'm not sure. We're going to look into exactly where Matt is today, and we'll be doing, like, maybe Roger will build it into the news and see if Matt's on a family vacation.
APB for Matt Bubala.
Yeah. I think he's on a desert island somewhere.
He's on it. Well, we wish we were, right? It got a lot colder. Well,
yeah.
I mean, desert in moderation. Is I think where we can go.
82 would be fine.
82 would be fine. Good. So 82 degrees is a little hot, but the action was hot in high school basketball. Dino, as you called some of the final games of the year.
Well, I did the PA announcing. I do that for a couple schools, for Hinsdale Central and West Chicago. And so tonight was the Hinsdale Central sectional championship game. And it was Naperville North and Wheaton North, two teams that are rivals in the DuPage Valley Conference out in the suburbs. And it was a packed house, and it was a great atmosphere all week. We had some real good games the last couple nights, so culminating with Naperville North moving on to the super sectional out at DeKalb on Tuesday. So
that's good. That's where you want to be.
Right, that's where you want to be, because then you're one step to state from there. You win the next game, and you're down in Peoria the following Saturday. So,
as did, of course, the Wildcats of Evanston Township.
That's right. We don't want to forget about that, Roger. Of course, we know your ties there. The Wildcats, one of their better teams they've had since
1968.
Yeah. But who remembers that?
Who's keeping track?
I do.
I know you do.
I was there.
That's fantastic.
I got one of the last tickets to Champaign for the finals.
They've got a kid named Nojel Eastern who's going to Purdue next year. That's absolutely fantastic.
See? And look at you guys going, so
it's,
going
it's
deep.
Gonna be a, it's gonna be a, it'll be a good one coming up next week. So a lot of good matchups.
A lot of good teams out there this year.
Yep. Yeah, everybody is shooting to at least initially get a chance to get to Peoria. We're going to bring a little Peoria on with us after the 3 o'clock break. We've got Blake Stubbs be calling us. You know, he's a lot of times he'll join us from Hollywood. But his hometown is Peoria, so he'll be there. And he'll be calling in with breaking down some of the action.
From King Kong.
On the movie side, right? The King Kong.
The Dave Kingman story. Wait a minute. Oh, that's a wrong
strikeout. That was, no. It was strikeout, home run.
That's right.
That would be the name of the book.
Strikeout, home run.
The Dave Kingman story. he was a great Cub. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and send it to news. It's staying here on 720 WGN.